Back on downtown, it's time for Message in the Bottle, brought to you by Bangor Wine and Cheese Company, 86 Hammond Street in downtown Bangor. Eric Meehan with us. Hello there, Mr. Meehan.
Hello, how are we doing?
Fabulous. How are you on this beautiful afternoon?
I'm not bad. I spent too much time in a vehicle and not enough time outside today, but that's all right. We're getting there. We're getting to the time when it's, you know, just all glory.
Did you have the window down and your head out the window like Greta might do?
I definitely did have the windows down today, yes, and my arm thrust outward, just kind of dangling rather sheepishly. Yeah. I'm not afraid. I can, I can embrace the old me would have laughed at me, but it's like, yeah, it's 59 degrees.
Yeah, exactly.
Go, sun's out, guns out. Let's do it. So, I have no guns, however, either real or metaphorically. what I do have, however, and I noticed this, especially during the eclipse gathering that we had yesterday, is I do have pale skin. So I'm excited for the sun to bless me with its rays. I suppose in that respect, I shouldn't have celebrated the eclipse. I should have cursed it. But yes, I hope everybody had fun during your either ventures out of town or, sort of saying, heck with it, 99% is good, like me.
Me too.
And stayed in town. Yeah, but we had, delicious pulled pork and pasta salad and didn't have to wait in a bevy of cars from out of state. So, but our mutual friend Lisa Sturgeon wrote something very, very good about how, we all must recognize that this was, an introduction to Maine for a lot of folks. So I hope everybody had a really good time. And since everybody here was used to traffic, I guess it didn't matter to them.
So exactly.
Yeah, but we were good. We kind of hung out here and had our friends over and just did our thing. It was great. And what was really interesting, I was kind of waiting for like all of our animals to just like stand up and start talking to each other and having tea, and none of that happened. A little disappointed in that respect. But yeah, it was cool. The other thing I tried to remind people is that Stephen King wrote at least, what I think, three novels based on, like, the 1976 eclipse here. So I'm like, just beware of what's coming.
Exactly. Got to be prepared. You never know. Yeah. And I'm still here, so apparently I did not make it to the rapture.
Yeah, that was the other thing. I was kind of waiting, but I had no such suspicions about myself. I knew that I am planted firmly here, my friend.
So, mm-hmm. I'm right here with you.
There. Yeah, that's all right. Bangor Wine shall remain open. So everybody obviously was probably, if you were like me, hanging out with people. You were perhaps cooking for a host of people and doing what we're going to talk about today, which is cooking with wine and or beer. I happen to slow cook a pork butt, and I used a can of Sir Beefy Stout. Which is from Blaze Brewing, and I did that, and that just gave it a beautiful flavor. So there you go. So while we're talking about it, we're talking about not necessarily pairing, of course, when we're talking about cooking, but more using this, whatever liquids as an ingredient. And the flavor profile is important. In fact, I was just reading on CNN; they have what is an IPA article. And obviously IPAs are very hoppy. And so you have to sort of think about the flavor profile of what you're using, be it wine, beer, we'll talk about ciders, hard liquors, et cetera. But you have to sort of think about that, because what's going to happen is as you cook things down, the flavors are only going to concentrate. So if the thing you're using is, pardon my French, but crap, it's not going to taste any better once you concentrate the flavors, right? So you have to sort of think about that. And to that aim, and I know I've said this a million times, but I'll say it again, don't cook with what you wouldn't drink. It just sort of stands to reason. If you're going to, you know, if anyone ever has taken like a sip of what they label as like cooking wine, it's very high in sodium. Like they add salt, like it's sort of flavored, right? And it's just atrocious. So you don't want to do that. That said, you don't want to use really expensive wines because, frankly, they're expensive. And you don't have to. And so I will now, you know, bore you all with a story you've heard a million times, but the fact that post-World War II, especially, but Prohibition kind of, and obviously this was pre-World War II, Prohibition kind of knocked what good alcohol was out of the American consciousness. This is the era of bathtub gin, etc. Just whatever you could do to get your drink on. Of course, there was good liquor being shipped into the U.S. as well. But by and large, it was just whatever you could do. And the quality wineries that survived, by and large, did it because they said they're sacramental wineries and did yada, yada, yada. They had all these exemptions. But essentially, once Prohibition ended and then World War II started, we sent all of our young men and a lot of women as well over to these famous vineyards, and they got trampled over, and you know the wine got stolen by Hitler. Lots of stories and such there that you can explore in your own time. But basically, when they came back, 1945, 46, 47, and then the GI Bill was introduced, there was more of the growth of the middle class, and the growth of the middle class also meant the growth of new kitchens and new opportunities for people to make food. And it also became the era of cookbooks and also the era of sort of faux wine from Europe, because it wasn't from Europe, it was from California. So they basically, before the EU and all those protections existed, California wineries took advantage of the fact that they're like trying to recover from Prohibition, trying to recover from the fact that, you know, enormous amounts of people were shipped over to Europe and, you know, it was sort of a state of, you know, holding down the fort here in the U.S. When things started to revive again, California wineries took these names of famous vineyard lands, Chablis, Sauternes, Champagne, Burgundy, etc., and applied them to mediocre California wines. And those are the wines that got put in the cookbooks. So you don't want to actually use a $60 Burgundy to cook beef Burgundy. You want to use a $12 Pinot Noir, which is the wine that's the grapes is in Burgundy, but not the cost, because everybody will be sad, including you. So cook with what you drink, but don't think that you need to use the exact wines that are perhaps in like an old Irma Rombauer or Julia Child recipe or things like that. Talk to your friendly wine merchant and find out what a good substitute would be. Moving on really quickly to beer, and we'll talk a little bit more about it next week. Beer is an entirely different animal than wine, especially when you're cooking with it. Why? There is yeast in both of them, but most of the yeast is out of wine, especially if it's been, you know, fined and filtered. Not so much with beer. So you're dealing with something that has like active yeast. It's much more akin to, you need to start thinking about it in sort of baking terms. And again, we'll talk about this more next week, but as you're thinking about it, if any of you like make bread and stuff like that, start to think about beer in terms of like a baked product that you drink. We'll talk more about it, like I said, next week. In the meantime, I hope everybody's well. Get outside today and get your gardening on, because we are in for another 40 days and 40 nights, it looks like, unfortunately. But we'll make it, and we'll enjoy the fruits of our labors soon. And, yeah, I'll talk to you all next week. Hope you're all well.
Thank you so much, sir. Have a good week, Eric, and we'll catch you next Tuesday.
Thanks, Rich.
You got it.
Bye-bye.
Eric Mann, Bangor Wine and Cheese Company. Message in the bottle every week here on Downtown.